20 days ago, Reverend Lynn and I boarded a plane to Minneapolis. The next day, we climbed into the back of a minivan and headed to Standing Rock, North Dakota. It has been challenging to try to put words to all that we experienced. It was deeply spiritual, emotionally profound, and physically taxing. It was a journey that will impact us for the rest of our lives, I think. The night we arrived, we joined with nearly 500 clergy in a gymnasium in a small town called Cannonball for orientation. We were told that we were there to be prayerful, peaceful, nonviolent, and lawful. The documents that they sent out ahead of time emphasized that we are to follow the leadership of indigenous people, not enforce or enforce our own ideas of what might be needed. Arriving at Camp Ocheti Shakawin in the next morning, we joined the circle around the sacred fire that has been kept burning since April. We chanted with the women who were conducting the morning water ceremony. We were witness to the public repudiation of the doctrine of discovery, which we discussed in more detail in the service on November 6th. If you want to hear more about that, it's on the website. We were smudged with the sacred smoke from sage and headed off in a slow amble down a long road. Songs began to rise from different religious traditions, and UUs that were sprinkled through the crowd began singing, "Spirit of Life." And then a song drifted into the air, and nearly everyone began to sing it. It was in three parts, plus harmony, with occasional musical embellishments. Does anyone have a guess as to what that song was? Good guess, but nope. Amazing Grace, another good guess, but nope. Another good guess. Alas, no. Dona nobis pacem, pacem. 500 religious leaders of 20 different religious traditions singing together on peace. About peace. Just this side of the construction, this side of the mass of law enforcement vehicles, this side of a pile of burnt out cars, just this side of the low bridge that crosses a quiet stretch of river, we gathered for the clergy event. Many people spoke many words. One of the most profound to me was an African-American woman minister who connected very clearly the struggle of the Sioux Nation and the struggle for Black Lives Matter, connecting how indigenous people are treated and how African-Americans are treated in this country. She named the intersectionality of the struggles while also honoring how they differ. She declared her solidarity from a spiritual, political, strong place. It emboldened the crowd. A cry for solidarity often rose up in the gathering and later in the camp, "Miniwichoni," which means water is life. And when someone calls it out, it is now a call and response that when one person says it, other people respond across the camp, "Miniwichoni." As a call and response of solidarity from all over the camp. There are other stories to tell of the rally, perhaps another day, because the story I want to share on this Sunday before Thanksgiving, Thanksgiving, happened back in camp. When we gathered together in the morning, the sacred firekeeper Adrian shared with us the importance of the fire. He instructed us on how to approach the sacred fire and invited us to come and share prayers by placing medicines, tobacco and cedar, into the fire as an offering. Before we left Auburn, thanks to Janie Evans, we were able to reach out to Shelley Covert, who is the secretary and spokesperson for the Nevada City Rancheria Tribal Council. We asked her if they would like us to carry anything from them to Standing Rock. They asked us to carry a letter. So the afternoon after the rally, we went back to Camp Ocheti Shakawin. We approached the sacred fire as we had been told how to do and asked Adrian what he would like us to do with the letter. He told us to read it from the open mic. We were a bit surprised by this, as you might imagine. He reassured us that this is what we should do. So we approached the microphone. We introduced ourselves very briefly because it wasn't about us. We explained about the letter and then read it aloud to those who were gathered around the fire, which included several colleagues from around the country. We were humbled by and grateful for the trust placed in us by the local indigenous leaders of the Nevada City Rancheria Tribal Council, by the Standing Rock Sioux who issued the call for clergy to come, by Adrian who invited us into the sacred ritual of approaching the fire and asking us to share the letter out loud, letting indigenous folks lead. Lynn and I are carrying so many stories, our own as well as the ones that were shared with us during our time there. The journey was powerful, heartbreaking, and yet, we are still so grateful that we were able to answer the call to go and be in solidarity with the Standing Rock Sioux. Gratitude in the midst of really difficult realities. We were sent home with the charge to learn more about our local Native peoples and be in solidarity with them and their work. This past weekend, we attended the Nishinan Heritage Day and had the opportunity to meet Shelley in person and share the story with her, thanking her for her trust in us to do such a sacred thing. It was a grateful, wonderful meeting with her. We also heard a talk by Tribal Chairman Johnson about how the Nishinan are still fighting to get federal recognition for their tribe. The suit has now reached the Supreme Court. I pray it gets seen before the inauguration, as I might imagine it will be a lot harder after. Kathleen Dean Moore, a white woman who we invited to come last March to the State Theater to address climate change, recently co-wrote an article with Robin Wall Kimmerer, citizen Potawatomi Nation is director of the Center for Native Peoples and the Environment. The article is called The White Horse and the Humvees. Standing Rock is offering us a choice. They wrote, "It's a confrontation not only between two groups of people, but between two worldviews. The space between the lines vibrates with tensions of race, historical trauma, broken treaties, money and politics, love and fear. But the underlying issue that charges the air, mixing with the smells of tear gas and sage, is the global contest between two deeply different ideas about the true meaning of land. On one side is the unquestioned assumption that land is merely a warehouse of lifeless materials that have been given to some of us by God or conquest to use without constraint. On this view, human happiness is best served by whatever economy most efficiently transforms water, soils, minerals, wild lives, and human yearning into corporate wealth. And so it is possible to love the bottom line on a quarterly report so fiercely that you will call out the National Guard to protect it. On the other side of the concrete barriers is a story that is so ancient it is revolutionary. On this view, the land is a great and nourishing gift to all beings. The fertile soil, the fresh water, the clean air, the creatures, swift or rooted, they require gratitude and veneration. These gifts are not commodities like scrap iron and sneakers. The land is sacred, a living, breathing entity for whom we must care as she cares for us. And so it is possible to love land and water so fiercely you will live in a tent in a North Dakota winter to protect it." 11 days ago, many of us woke up to election results that seemed to uphold that first worldview. Greed, destruction of the earth, further marginalization of people. How many of you have been having more memory issues than usual lately? Forgetting where you're putting things, names are escaping you. What was I getting in this room? How many of you have been experiencing lethargy? Or just plain overwhelm? Have you found yourself maybe less patient than usual? More easily annoyed? More quickly teary? Or maybe just frustrated or outright angry? If so, you, like me, are probably in mourning. The stages and symptoms of grief are manifesting all around us in large measure. And in addition to the variety of feelings you might be having about your safety or loved ones, or maybe just stuck in denial or numbness, you might also just be sick of hearing about the election, or you might now also be embodying a sense of urgency that we need to do something. All of us, no matter how you voted, have experienced some trauma. You might not call it that, but I will. Trauma from this whole election process as we watched or listened or read with horror the terrible things said, the lies in the form of promises made, or somehow figuring out how democracy is supposed to get through this. I honor wherever you are on the spectrum of feeling and whatever you might be experiencing right now as we consider our country the soul of our nation, led by a man who makes fun of people with disabilities, says things and then says he didn't say them, and who wants to deport millions of immigrants. And his choice for vice thinks conversion therapy can make queer folks heterosexual, and that businesses and government employees should be able to decide whether or not to serve people like me. So trauma feels like the right word. Rector Mike Kinman of All Saints Episcopal Church in Pasadena said last week to his congregation that deep trauma can be healed, but first it must be felt. It must be expressed. We need to feel the anger of the protesters in the streets and not just dismissively call them crybabies who didn't get their way. We need to feel the terror of the Salvadoran student who not only knows that his DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals status, won't save him from deportation, but also that the information he gave the government might now very well be used against him. We need to feel the grief of the mother who has no idea how to explain to her 8-year-old little girl why her country chose a man who brags about objectifying, abusing, and violating women over a woman who told her daughter to never doubt that she is valuable and powerful and deserving of every chance and every opportunity in the world to pursue her dreams. These feelings are real. He continues, those of us who are not truly vulnerable ourselves have to start normalizing this election as a way to ease our discomfort. Those among us who have nothing real to fear must stop issuing calls for unity and respect that are really just calls for traumatized people to sit down and shut up. Rector Kinman invites us to feel what we are feeling, to share our stories of pain with one another, to seek to understand rather than dismiss one another's feelings. He says we do not stop proclaiming not the twisted false gospel of uncontextualized slaves obey your masters, of misogynistic homophobic hate, but the true gospel, he says, the true gospel of the Christ who was born as a dark-skinned refugee who died with his hands up because he was challenging the authority of a police state. Standing Rock is about challenging that authority too. With hands up and no weapons, they are fighting for the right to live. To live. The Dakota Access Pipeline is another in a long line of attempts at genocide. Native peoples are protecting the water for all of us. We need to stand against a worldview of domination and protect the Sioux and the Nishinan and the Maidu and the Lakota and the Winnemem-Wintu so that they can live. The Thanksgiving holiday was taught to most of us as a day when the pilgrims and the Indians came together and everything was hunky-dory. It wasn't. And that's why I and others call it Thanksgiving Thanksgiving. That story, as many of you know, is a whitewashing of history that has perpetuated the colonization, relocation, and decimation of millions. Millions of Native peoples. Solidarity with Standing Rock means resisting that and telling the truth. It means being willing to grieve with them what is happening to our sacred Mother Earth. As a nonprofit, SFUU isn't allowed to engage in any activity that could be perceived as campaigning, that is, for or against a candidate. Once someone is elected, however, they are no longer a candidate. And I, for one, am incredibly angry and quite scared about what a Trump-Pence administration will destroy in the next year, will enact in the next year. They are the poster children for the worldview that is hell-bent on destruction, domination, and denigration under the guise of less government, stronger economy, and safety. Believe me, it is hell-bent on destruction, domination, and denigration. Kimmerer and Moore remind us that this, like all times of paradigm shift, is an unsettled time, a time of shouting and police truncheons as privileged people defend the assumptions that have served them royally. We are living in a paradigm shift, perhaps unsure which way things will go, perhaps trying to figure out how to use the privilege that we have to bring about changes that honor the earth and respect diversities. On Thursday night at the University of Chicago, activist and scholar Angela Davis, addressing the crowd about the elections, Black Lives Matter, and the great city of Chicago, asked, "How do we begin to recover from this shock? By experiencing and building and rebuilding and consolidating community. Community is the answer." It is important to recognize the feelings we are feeling, the reasons we are feeling them, to expressing them more or less appropriately, and to be seen and heard and cared about. It is also crucial at this juncture, with the shifting landscape and the air of change electric with fear, that we build our capacity for resilience. We're gonna need it. Our capacity for resilience. Pickett's words that we read earlier, "For our human community, our common past and future hope, our oneness transcending all separation, our capacity to work for peace and justice in the midst of hostility and oppression, we give thanks this day." So even choosing to become woke about the terrible things happening in Standing Rock, the now over 400 incidents of hate speech and cruelty against marginalized persons just since the election, the deaths of 26 people who were transgender, with the many things that are happening intent on breaking our spirit and diminishing our hope, we will rise resilient because we can also choose to cultivate gratitude. Gratitude. I am grateful for our capacity to work for peace and justice in the midst of all of this. I am grateful for this religion that values every person and encourages us to work for the betterment of all. I am grateful for quenching rain. I am grateful to the great spirit of life and love, whom some call God and some know to be the best of the human spirit, who called me to ministry. I am grateful to have an incredible spouse who loves me beyond measure. I feel grateful for the taste of chocolate and for a movie night with several of our families on Friday to see Zootopia. In the face of all that is, what are you grateful for?
A congregation. Mm-hmm. Family.
Yes.
Family.
Yes.
Right. For Central Plant.
Yes.
Health.
Yes.
For
our
friends.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Living in California.
Yes.
Good stories.
Yes.
Bed.
Yes.
You. A bed to sleep in.
Yes.
A breath.
Tissue. Yes. Yes.
One night stand.
Yes.
Even a journey.
Yes.
A wait a minute.
Yes.
Grandchildren.
Yes.
Love.
Yes. Yes. So much to be grateful for, even as there is so much misery and destruction happening. Is anyone else grateful for this religious community?
Yes.
To be alive right now, to help that second worldview come into being?
Yes.
Where all are cherished?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Where the earth is precious?
Yes.
Where we build beloved community?
Yes.
As you gather with family and friends this holiday season, practice feeling and expressing gratitude hard as it might be with some of your family. Hard as it might be because you might find them challenging, or perhaps they find you challenging. Practicing gratitude. Every day we can practice and strengthen our resilience through this. Because arguing doesn't get us anywhere, right? Right? It just gets us into more arguing. You might just say, huh, that isn't my experience. Pass the rolls. Or, wow, I have a really different point of view that nurtures all life. I'm so grateful that you've invited me to be here with you today. That really matters. Or maybe you could say, isn't it fascinating that when faced with the same problem, we have come to radically different conclusions about how to solve it? This is really good pumpkin pie. Not arguing, but connecting. Being true to your values by speaking with love. By expressing gratitude at the opportunity to come to better understanding with one another. Letting go of the need to be right and simply to be present. Resilience. Resilience. Mark Words said in our opening words, there is cause for gratitude for the love we share, even if imperfect and not always fully realized. Every day of our journeys, we are given new opportunities to accept and to give love. As long as we can experience gratitude, we can bring more love into this world. And if we can bring more love into this world, then beloved community is possible. May it be so. Salam. Shalom. Namaste. Ashe. Aho. Amen. And blessed be.